are liking the new beats on the Hang Time Podcast, Lang. Somebody shouted us out on Twitter the other day saying that they like the new tunes we got at the top of the show. Sekou Smith from the Hang Time blog, not from NBA.com. We're going to keep shouting out the Hang Time blog and the All Ball blog until we get over their demise.
R.I.P.
My main man, Lang Whitaker in New York.
Yo, what's up?
Doing his thing. Sleeping last night in Philly when Russell Westbrook gets the double shotgun barrels from a fan. They got you captured in the pick, Lang. Seriously, you were asleep, bro.
The double Philly salute.
Yes, you were knocked out. It looked like you were knocked out, sit in the like three rows behind.
I was actually
explain yourself.
I was looking at my laptop. And I was trying to figure out, because I knew I had to write something post games, and I was actually starting on it then. And then I was sitting there in the third row next to Jared Greenberg, who's on his own journey for the 10 Before Tip show. And Jared and I were sitting there, and all of a sudden Jared goes, "I think that guy's shooting the bird." And I said, "What?" And I looked up, but apparently there was an image that went viral on Twitter featuring me looking down at my laptop. And I started getting tweets and texts and calls and everything.
Yeah, somebody sent it to me on a set, and they were like, "Hey, did you see this?" Yeah. So I'm looking at the fan, you know, flipping Westbrook the bird. I'm like, "Yes, I mean, so what?" And they're like, "No, look in the background." So I looked in the background. I was, "What, is he asleep?" I was like, "This dude, they busted this dude on camera snoozing?" But no, it was
I wish.
Good times. We moved to Thursday here on the Hang Time Podcast, just a little housekeeping. This gives us an opportunity to catch Lang in the act of dozing off at basketball games on Wednesday night, since there's so much Wednesday night action in the league. And it'll also give us a chance to kind of talk about the Thursday night matchups, the marquee matchups on TNT and the other games in the weekend. So
we're burying the lead, though.
Yeah, well, you think? Everybody watched Tuesday night, the real open of this NBA season. It's great to have NBA basketball back if you're anybody but the Warriors, who got stroked. I mean, they got smoked the other night.
That was unbelievable. Unbelievable.
I kept trying to turn it to see Dame Lillard go off, you know, against the Jazz, watch him and Joe Johnson stage their epic duel.
You can't kill ISO Joe. He's still there.
But, I mean, I kept flicking back to the Warriors game thinking, all right, they'll get this thing trimmed to 8, and it'll be a game in the fourth quarter. They got destroyed.
It was brutal.
I mean, Kawhi Leonard and LaMarcus Aldridge did their thing, but I thought the real moment when I said this game is officially gone to the dark side, Jonathan Simmons got the ball at the top of the key and waved off everybody. He had Kevin Durant in front of him. And he's telling everybody, like, clear out. Like, I got KD on me, clear out. I'm going to get this bucket. And I was like, you know what? That's when the respect level for a team as formidable as the Warriors is officially at rock bottom. And this is on opening night.
I still felt like throughout the second half, even in the lead was around 10, 15, something like that. And I just kept waiting for Golden State to make one of those runs, and they didn't have it in them.
I'm stunned.
As someone who did not have a vested interest either way in how that game came out, it was about as interesting and entertaining as it could have been, because it was the team that nobody was going to be able to beat, that was going to win 75 games, just getting drilled by the Spurs.
Against a team a lot of people forgot. Basically.
Without Danny Green.
Yeah.
Without
Tim Duncan. Yeah. Team that won 67 games last year, and people seem to have forgotten about it.
They were incredible.
Is it wrong for me, Lang, and I, you know, I'm always the old crusty on the Hang Time Podcast here. Is it wrong for me to look too much into this one game and start poking holes in this Warriors machine? The bench is clearly not what it was previously. Luke Walton's gone, gets his first win as Lakers head coach. If anybody would have told you in the summer that the Warriors would be behind the Lakers in the Pacific Division standings at any point in this season, you'd have slapped them.
I told you clearly everything for the Warriors started going downhill when Steve Kerr came back from his injuries last year. And I was joking when I said that.
But, I know.
But the Lakers, I didn't see that game. I was driving back from Philly last night late, so I didn't see that. But I was in the press room with Michael Lee, and we were laughing about how the Rockets had 70 points halftime. And James Harden had 14 assists at halftime. And then I got back in the car and drove back, and then I saw the Lakers won that game. So I didn't see it. I don't know how that happened. But I watched that Warriors game, and, yeah, the bench is an issue. I think there's very few teams, though, that are set up the way the Spurs are set up that can do that to the Warriors.
Attack them at the rim like that. Yeah,
that have an Aldridge, that have a Pau Gasol, that have those kind of – that Kawhi can go inside like that and attack you from the inside out. Right. So many teams now are trying to emulate the Warriors and their outside in. So it was sort of a perfect storm, but man, it was pretty incredible to see.
Yeah. I was texting people the other night during the game. As you well know, I wasn't butt dialing people for once. I was actually texting. Draymond Green and Steve Kerr, the friction that was evident in that game, do you think that's a bigger problem? Ethan Sherwood Strauss wrote a really interesting article for ESPN the magazine just about Draymond being potentially the guy who upsets the order in Golden State and keeps him from being what they could be because of his attitude and his antics. Are you worried that Draymond could become a roadblock for that Warriors team?
I'm not. I mean, two things. Number one, I think there's a thin line between being a roadblock and a stumbling block and being like the straw that stirs the drink in a good way.
Right.
You know? And I think it's a fine line to be the guy who agitates in a good way and to be the guy who agitates in a way that breaks things apart. But to me, the bigger thing is, who are the guys he's going to, you know, quote unquote, upset? Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, Klay Thompson. I mean, those are really the only three guys he's got to worry about on that team.
And
I don't think those guys are going to get too shaken up by
You saw Draymond. Mama Green tweeting and everything. She was getting in on it.
I don't think they care. I don't think if Draymond uses a curse word in the locker room, they're going to get that upset about it.
Right.
They've probably heard things and seen worse, and so, you know, to me that's really it's part of being a team, and it's part of, you know, it's when you're living with these guys for 8 months at a time, you're not best friends with everybody, you're not
true
anti friends with everybody, but or enemies anti friends, but either way, you have to figure out a way to get along, and I think that's really what matters there in Golden State.
Yeah, well, I mean, you've been in close quarters with a crew of people the past couple of years, so you know how quickly attitudes can go south and emotions can get riled up. It's be interesting. Very curious. I mean, they lost their home opener and their first game. They didn't lose last year until their 25th game and didn't lose at home until April.
Yeah.
So it's a different world for the Golden State Warriors this year. Hashtag bring back Luke Walton. You were at a fantastic, mm-hmm. in, you know, like when you talk about interesting subplots for the start of the season, you were at the Thunder Sixers game where Russell Westbrook did Russ, you know, chased a triple-double, led his team to a close win. But Joel Embiid I was watching his highlights again, like before I came down to the studio. I so want him to be what we saw in this first game.
Yeah,
I'm, because I feel like we got robbed of Greg Oden and what he might have been, and I didn't want that to happen to another young big man. I want to see Joel Embiid get a chance to live up to his potential. The crowd looked like they were going bananas too, as he was, every shot he made, like they were like getting out of their seats and going crazy.
An extra long look to make sure he's okay. They're chanting MVP. They are so hungry and so desperate for some positives in what has been such a difficult 3-year stretch.
And Mike, this is not a good basketball town, a great basketball town. Villanova Wildcats, national champions. Larry Brown's great Sixer team.
It was incredible. I think, first of all, that crowd in Philly's been through so much the last few years, waiting for this thing to redevelop and turn around and trusting the process. Brett Brown, the Sixers coach, said before the game he had some numbers, and he said, I'm going to paraphrase, I don't know exactly. He said something like they've had 50-something players the last 3 years, and 11 of them are still in the NBA.
Wow.
He said he's had 14 point guards since he started there, and he was like, you know, imagine if the Eagles had 14 quarterbacks. And I almost said, I think they have,
yeah.
But they've been through a lot, and they've been waiting so long for Embiid And they, you know, you keep hearing these little things about, oh, you should just see how, you know, he's so strong and so tall and can do so many things. And we see the little videos pop up on Vine, right. RFB Vine, by the way. See the little videos pop up of Embiid shooting jump shots and, you know.
He's got soft touch for a big man. I was stunned at how soft his shooting touch was. Yeah.
So anyway, all of that kind of came together last night and coalesced and to Embiid starting. He had a 20-minute time limit. I think he ended up playing 22 minutes, something like that. But he had 20 points, 7 boards in that time. He's got to tone down a little bit of the histrionics. I understand he's been gone for so long, and he wanted to get out there so bad.
I like it.
It was. I mean, look, he I don't think he passed the ball once the whole game. I mean, every time he caught the ball.
You've been out this long, man. You know, pass for what?
He caught the ball with his back to the basket, turned, shot every time. And so there's a lot of that going on. I don't know how it works if because of the injuries and the time limits, they had to stagger basically him and Okafor the entire game.
Right.
And if those two guys are on the court together, I don't know who's getting the ball and who's going to pass it, because it's going in and not coming back out. But longer term, there's questions to be answered. But short term, it was pretty awesome. He was great.
Yeah.
Super athletic. I talked to a bunch of the guys who played in the game, and everyone was impressed by him. One of the guys, a longtime NBA executive, said had seen some stuff from Embiid and said, I've been around a lot of guys. I've seen a lot of things. I've never seen something like this talent in this body if he can stay healthy.
Yeah. So he's huge. If
he can stay healthy, that's the key.
Yeah, he's huge. I mean, I was noticing just size-wise, he was facing Steven Adams up.
Yeah.
And he's every bit as big, you know, height-wise. And I was like, man, I didn't realize. I know he was supposed to be 7 feet, but I didn't think he was that bulky until I saw him.
I think at one point he was yelling, he can't guard me, at Steven Adams. So
yeah, why wait? Do you build a body of work? Just crank it up from day one, baby.
If the Thunder had wanted to, they could have just run a double team at him and made him pass the ball, and then we would have seen what had happened.
Right.
By the end of the game, Adams got a couple stops on him down the stretch. But it was fun to watch. And for these Philly fans who've waited for so long, they were just ready to explode. And they were so loud and boisterous and having so much fun with Embiid. When he got to the free throw line, you know, instead of everybody, the whole crowd was just screaming as loud as they can, trust the process. And he was nodding and smiling as he was shooting. It was incredible.
Hilarious. He wasn't the only guy to have a monstrous opening game. Anthony Davis.
Yeah.
Went for 50 in the Pelicans opener. They lost, of course.
That's his second 50 game?
Yeah, I mean, he's ridiculous. I mean, he was doing it all. His official line, of course, 50 points on 17-34 shooting, 16 rebounds, 7 steals, 5 assists, 4 blocks, 3 turnovers, 41 minutes. But, of course, the same applies to him. He's got to stay healthy.
Yeah.
Got to stay on the floor. You know. Yeah, you know, and look, all I'm going to tell you is right now, he's the first player to tally 40-10 in a season opener since one Shaquille O'Neal in 1993.
But I don't know, did Shaq lose that game?
I don't remember.
Here's a question for you. You're building your team. Would you rather have Anthony Davis or Joel Embiid?
Karl Anthony Towns.
He's not in the question. It's a two-man question.
Oh, Anthony Davis.
Anthony Davis.
Yeah.
I mean,
Embiid's, that was cute and all, your first game. But, I mean, if he comes back and doesn't score 20 points in his next 3 games combined, that'll be forgotten. Anthony Davis, we know what he's capable of when he's healthy. But, I mean, DeMar DeRozan went for 40, over, you know, and the Raptors went over Detroit. Miles Turner went for 30 in the Pacers' overtime win.
30 and 16, right?
Yeah. I mean, and 4 blocks.
Yeah.
Your boy James Harden, of course, got his buckets, even though they lost to the Lakers. 34 and 17 assists, 8 rebounds, 7 turnovers, you know, James Harden type line. But it's interesting, all these different faces in these new places we've talked about all summer. I'm loving watching how this is going to play out. I mean, to me, that's going to be the most interesting thing between now and, like, Thanksgiving, is just to see how comfortable some of these guys are. Like, your boy Jeff Teague wearing 44 in Indiana. Yeah. It was funny. We were on the set, and Greg Anthony was like, is he wearing 44? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, man, that's not a regular number you see on a point guard. And I was like, hey, man, the league is crazy. I mean, it's shook up right now. Everything's tipped upside down. So, you know, crazy numbers on jerseys, crazy numbers on guys' stat lines. I'm taking it all right now. We got the NBA back, and I want all of it, every drip drop of it. But enough of us yip-yapping. Let's bring our guest here on the Hang Time Podcast. Let's get into a bit of a different conversation along the lines of what you saw last night and a little bit more about the Oklahoma City Thunder. Friend of the program, veteran Nick Collison. Nick, how are you, my man?
I'm doing all right. Got back late, but I'm happy to be here on the podcast this morning.
Nice, nice.
Undefeated. The undefeated Oklahoma City Thunder.
That's right. That's right. The unblemished Oklahoma City Thunder.
Oh, right, right.
This first, see, you know, this first game, start of this season with a completely different DNA, if you will, for as long as Kevin Durant was with you guys. How weird is it having that piece of the franchise gone, or is it already sunk in by the time you got to the season?
Well, I think it was strange when camp started, for sure. It wasn't just Kevin, Serge, and it felt, for the first time, it felt like a really different thing. We've had a few guys come and go over the years, but mostly we've had continuity with a lot of guys. So it did. It felt different at the start of camp, but, you know, we've been going at it about a month, so kind of over that and trying to move on and trying to figure out how we're going to play now. And it's good to get a win last night, but we got a ways to go, I think, before we are as good as we can be. That's where we're at now.
Nick, last night against the Sixers, you guys, it was sort of a close game. And down the stretch, Russ kind of became Russ that we all know and love, and scored, I think, 9 points in the last 4 minutes of the game and kind of put it away. You know, last year you guys had games where you struggled to close, and it was sort of a thing throughout the season. Is it different now? I mean, is it a different challenge to close a game without KD and Russ out there and Serge and everyone? And now it's kind of just Russ, and everyone focuses on him. And he sets other guys up, or he scores for himself. I mean, how is it different this season with just Russ as the focal point a lot of times?
Well, I think the difference is, we're not going to get away with it as much as we used to. You know, we used to get away with not playing well, but being able to pull it out at the end because we're so talented. You know, we still have one of those guys that every team would want to have. But
yeah.
I think we have to rely more on, just our level of player, level of execution throughout the game, putting us in better positions to be in a better position at the end of the game. And we've been saying that for years, and we have made strides in it. But now I think it's clear we really have to let, you know, our offense generate, you know, what we're doing execution-wise has to generate shots for us. And it can't just be players generating shots on their own. It's just not sustainable. So Russ is incredible, and he played great last night. And I think he managed the game really well. He made good decisions all game and ran the team. And that's where I think I've seen the biggest improvement in him over the years. But this year he's been in camp. He's really been just in total control of every single day, practice and preseason games and last night.
Someone mentioned to me that there was a game earlier when Steven, I think in training camp, Steven had been out with a sprained ankle or something, and the game started and Russ kind of made plays for Steven, like the first five possessions of the game or something like that. And they were saying, like, Russ seems to really have taken a step as far as understanding how to set other guys up and understanding the, not only just how to do it, but the importance of that, setting those guys up for the rest of the game, you know, the way they're playing.
Yeah, absolutely. He's got a really good understanding now just of what is going on with all of the guys on the team. I think as a young player, like so many young players, he's trying to establish himself in this league and what kind of player he's going to be. But now as he's gotten older, more mature and just more in control, he's thinking about those things. He knows he's got to get guys going and he does it with the decisions on the court. He does it with play calls. He'll see something a lot of times. He'll try to get Andre going on a back cut for a lob. We have a couple sets where he can sneak back door, and he sees all that stuff and he's aware of all that stuff now. It's really been fun to see him grow up, mature, and And he's an incredible leader on the court. And it's not just the typical rah-rah stuff. It's the way he talks to guys and the way he manages the game now.
Nick, Victor Oladipo comes in and is asked to step into a very important role on that team. What are your impressions of him so far and how he fits into that dynamic?
Yeah, I think he's trying to figure out, you know, how he fits with us. He's huge for us because he's one of the few guys we have now that can really get in the lane, create his own shot, and create stuff for other guys. So I think he's trying to figure out, you know, how to play off the ball and how to find his spots and be aggressive. And, you know, we want him to be really solid on the defensive end too. He's a guy that gets a lot of steals and makes plays, but I think we're trying to get him to focus more on the principles and understanding that a game plan, and if you can give up a contested jump shot, that's a win, as opposed to trying to gamble so much for steals. And so there's just different things I think he's trying to figure out, and he's still a really young player, and he's got a new system, new players, but he's very important for us on both ends of the court. We need him to be aggressive on the offensive end and be able to be a threat on the offensive end, and then, you know, be really solid defensively too.
Nick, have you ever worn a kilt to a basketball game, or have you ever just worn a kilt in general?
No, not at all. I think you knew the answer to that question. But, no.
I had an idea. I just thought, after seeing the way Russ arrived last night, it's pretty spectacular. Do you think we've seen the best of Russ in his arrival gear, or do you think he has another level he can take this thing to?
What does it escalate to? It's escalated since, I think, the first time he wore a printed shirt with red glasses, and that blew everyone's mind. Yeah. Now you go on every website, Banana Republic, they sell those printed shirts, and it's like, that's nothing now. It's like, it just keeps escalating. Like, where does it end? I don't know. Is it possible to go further? Well, I was joking. I actually saw Lang last night. I was telling him, you know, we were talking like, you can just wear anything and people will say, oh, that's cool. Like, that's a new thing. Like, we were just trying to like come up with different things that like, could you make Crocs cool? Like just, where does it go from here? I don't know. We'll see.
I'm hoping we get I told Nick, I was hoping we get an Andre 3000 blonde wig for one of these games. That would be the ultimate.
Like, hey,
I don't
think there's a ceiling. I think people just feel like, oh, of course, like the one game he wore like a shredded shirt and like his nipple was exposed. Like, there's no ceiling to this. Like, it's just kidding. I don't know where it goes from here.
I mean, at the end of the day, as long as he keeps putting up triple doubles, like, what are you gonna say? You know, like,
right? Exactly. I mean, people just have embraced it. Yeah. He's in that rare zone where he can just do whatever and people just accept it. Like, it's just.
I think you guys ought to vote. Like. Give him three or four options each game and have the rest of you guys vote. Like, I'd love to see him walk in with no shirt, space boots, and some parachute pants. Just something completely obnoxious. Just to get it crazy.
I feel like it's headed there. Yeah. I mean, he's probably going to play another 10 years. Like,
yeah.
I don't see him one day just wearing like normal clothes again. Maybe that'll be crazy if he just shows up in like a sweater and like
some bad jeans. Yeah. That'd be sweet. You've been in the league so long, and I think people forget how hard it is to survive in this league for as long as you and a lot of other veterans have. What's the one thing you can tell a young guy about perseverance and staying power in this league now at your age and at this stage of your career?
Well, a lot of times what I try to tell young guys is, you know, when you're growing up, high school, college, like you want to build towards playing in the NBA, but it always feels like the coaches are making you do things. Like, your high school coach is making you do this. Your college coach is making you run, making you do all these things. You got to lift weights. But it always has been an investment in your career. But I think especially in the NBA, what you need to realize is you're investing in your own career every day. So it's like, whatever you do, like today for your career, like you can get a return from it. You can get, you know, whatever that is, it's getting into the rotation, it's playing better, more minutes, more consistency, whatever it is, it's going to build. It's all you can get paid back by building, you know, your career day by day. And that's what I always try to tell guys. It's about just doing the work every single day and being engaged every day and finding a way to be effective and help the team, because that's ultimately what's going to keep you on the court and make coaches want to play you, make teams want to keep you, make teams want to sign you. That's really what it is, I think, is finding a way to invest in every day, doing the work, and then also figuring out ways to be effective on the court. And it's hard because it's a lot of the roles when you get to NBA, a lot of guys are playing different roles than they've ever played before. They're doing different things. Maybe they never really defended very well, but you're forced to really, you can't get in the game and then not be able to defend because the coach will take you out, because there's very few guys that are good enough offensively that can be a negative on defense and stay in the game. You know, there's a couple guys on each team, but everybody else, you have to be really solid. So there's a lot of different ways to affect the game. And that's what I always try to just pass on, is just, you know, it's more about the day to day, and that's how you build consistency and build a career. I feel like you build a career, you know, day by day.
We were when we were about to call you, Nick, I gave the engineer in there your cell phone number, and Saker said, how often has Nick changed his cell phone number? And I was like, I think he's had the same number the entire time. Like,
I think I think I got it my rookie year in Seattle.
So many guys.
That's got to be a record. That's got to be an NBA record.
So many dudes change their number every month.
So. Yeah. I don't know. I've avoided that one stalker or whoever that guys have always ran into that they've had to, or that media guy that won't leave, whatever it is. I've somehow avoided that. So I've never felt the need to change it.
You've had that same email address for a long time too, right? And it has your uniform number in it.
Like, I have one from high school. I just heard somebody talking about this on Twitter, like the embarrassing email addresses from high school. Mine's just my high school jersey number, which is corny, but it's not as embarrassing as a lot. That's not the one I use now, but I still have it. So, like, that's what I send all the likely junk mail things. Like, you know, if there's a certain thing where you have to put an email down, but you don't want to get, you know, bombarded with junk mail, that's the one I use for that, though.
Nice. No, I know guys who have changed numbers like 4 times within the off season. Like, you call their number, they're like, hey, give me a call on my cell. You call, it's like, this number is no longer in service. Like, what?
Oh, my teammates, like, a lot of times I'll text a teammate and know that it's probably not going to go through. So, like, there's usually like one person in the organization that they have to have up in. So I always check with her. There's a woman that helps with a lot of stuff, so I always know she's got the updated numbers, but everybody else, or half the ones I have probably don't work anymore.
There was a story recently. A friend of ours, Mark Spears from The Undefeated, wrote about white American players in the NBA and the fact that there's really a dearth of white American NBA players, guys who have battled their way up the ranks and made it to the league. And the story itself was interesting, but I was reading the comments of Doug McDermott, and he was talking about you and Rafe LaFrance and Kirk Heinrich and all these guys from Iowa. White American players from Iowa who made it to or are in the NBA. And I'm just trying to figure out, that's supposed to be an Indiana thing, the basketball, Hoosiers.
Right.
What's up with Iowa and all these white American basketball players?
There's nothing else to do there.
Yeah, I don't know. There's other ones, too. There's, like, Fred Hoiberg and Ryan Bowen. We have some black NBA players, too. Harrison Barnes, Ricky Davis is from Iowa. It's a pretty good basketball state. I think it's a similar field to Indiana. Like you said, there's not a lot to do. And we've had some talented guys and some decent AAU programs that were just kind of getting started when I was in school, but now they have more teams, so kids are playing more. I always had some good players, and I think we're proud of it. We're being a smaller state. I don't know what the numbers are per capita, but, I mean, we got a lot of NBA players compared to most small states, sparsely populated states like that.
It's
been fun to see the guys. Kyle, myself, and Kirk were all in the same class in Iowa, and Kirk isn't signed. I don't know if he's going to play this year, but to be able to have the long careers we've had is pretty cool.
It's amazing. It's pretty amazing when you think about it, just the sheer numbers.
And Doug is going to be great, and Harrison, they're going to have a long career, so we'll have a few for for a long time. So yeah. Hopefully we can get some more younger guys in.
Absolutely. Nick Carlson from the Oklahoma City Thunder joining us here on the Hangtime Podcast. Before we let you go, I'm hoping these questions dwindle as the season goes on, but so much is made, you know, about the relationship you and Kevin and Russell had, and it sounds like Kevin and Russ have not communicated a whole lot since Kevin decided to leave. How much contact have you had, if at all, with KD, just as a friend, not about anything to do mm-hmm. with the move or anything?
I haven't talked to him much. He sent me a nice text when he made his decision to leave and just texted me recently for my birthday. And, you know, we were good friends. All of us were close. I wouldn't necessarily text him a lot in the summers. We maybe a couple times, but I think we'll all be okay. It's yeah. just it's a tough thing. And, you know, it's we spent a lot of time together and everybody was disappointed. You know, around here, we, you know, understand, you know, he's got the right to do that. We were disappointed. It's just, it's something I think evolve over time, but, yeah. he's going to do great there. And, we're going to do well here and, you know, life goes on, I guess. And that's kind of the way I look at it. It was tough to get over this summer, but when we got into camp, it's a new thing and we got good guys here and we're on to something else. And he's moving on to something else too. So, you know, life goes on, I guess, is really all I can say about it.
Yeah.
One more thing I wanted to ask you. I've never asked you about him, I don't think. One of the guys who's kind of emerged over the last 6 months as a building block for the franchise there is Steven Adams. And I know you've as a fellow big man, have helped mentor him and be around him. But he just seems like quite a character. Is that a very simple way
of
putting it?
Yeah, he really is a unique guy. Well, first of all, basketball-wise, like when he got here, I saw right away he was going to be really good. And it's a combination of first ability. I mean, he's huge and he can really move and he's skilled. But he's tough and right. He works hard and he wanted to be coached. So I felt like from day one, like he was going to be a special guy. And now I think what we're seeing is just he's a lot more comfortable and he's just playing. And he's always been capable of doing these things with the ball mm-hmm. and doing these things defensively, being a help defender, post defender, pick and roll. I mean, he's switching on guards and Golden State's guys in the playoffs. Like he can do a lot of things. Mm-hmm. He's just finally building confidence and getting comfortable. He's only 23 years old. So he's only played 1 year of college basketball and he's a monster. As a guy, he's awesome, man. He's really smart. He's interested in a lot of things. He can talk about a lot of things. He doesn't take himself seriously at all. And just the way he grows out, the way he was raised. I went to New Zealand this summer and met his family, and I can see why he is the way he is, because it's just nonstop. Those guys just getting on everybody. It's like really funny, smart, quick-witted, sharp guys that just give each other, you know, crap all day long, every day. And they're really funny guys. I think it's cool because he's got a great perspective on his place in the world and realizes he's just like everybody else. And it's refreshing to see a guy like that. Everybody likes him he's fun. And he's just like hyper. It's just energy all the time, nonstop. He's always, always going. So he's a good dude.
I admired he had the camo Thunder baseball cap on last night with the Yeezys. Yeah. It was quite a look.
Yeah, he's almost like, Russ won his own way where you don't know what he's going to wear either, but his is like just because it doesn't care at all. The Thunder camouflage hat, there's a rite of passage him and his buddies have to gain one of those, because two of his best friends from New Zealand that have been over here a couple times have them and they wear them all the time. And I won't say what they had to do to get the hat, and I don't think Steven will tell you either, but that he wears that hat with pride. That's a badge of honor. And I had the opportunity to do what they do to get the hat, and I passed. I waved my chance. It wasn't worth it for me. So.
Does it have anything to do with? I'm not going to give any clues.
It's probably never going to come to light. I probably already said too much because Dallas has got Steven about it. But,
This is going to be an internet mystery now.
Let's actually move on. I don't want to push this anymore.
I'd be afraid of pissing off Steven Adams. Right. So
now we got something to dig up when we get to Oklahoma City. Listen, Nick, make sure you answer that ancient self, that flip phone of yours. When we call you and we're in Oklahoma City, man, make sure you pick up, all right?
Will do.
All right, but appreciate it, man.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks, yep. Nick Collison, thanks, Nick. Oklahoma City Thunder, join us here on Hang Time Podcast. Lang, he's always an interesting conversation. I know you guys are good friends and you talk to him often. But it's refreshing to talk to somebody about the NBA who gives you real straight answers without giving up the goods, obviously, on the rite of passage for the hat. But good dude.
He, one of my favorite things was years ago when I was working for GQ and they were like, we want an NBA player to write a diary for the website once a month. And I said, I think Nick Collison would be incredible at it. And, you know, I think they wanted a superstar level player. And I was like, you can get that. And the guy will write, hey, we took a flight here and we went and stayed in the hotel and went to the game. Or you can get a guy like Nick, who's going to like really think about it and work at it. And Nick did an awesome job doing that diary, so much so that one month I said, why don't you write a column about what it's like to be a role player and understanding that role. You kind of asked him about it, accepting that role, becoming having a career instead of just being an NBA player. And he wrote a column, and I heard later that at least one NBA coach printed out copies of it and left it in every player's locker on his team. Because they wanted them to see, like, this is the kind of thought that goes into having an NBA career, not just being an NBA player.
I tell people all the time how difficult it is, if you're not a superstar in this era, to stay in the league as long as he has. You know, you look at The Wire when they were cutting rosters down the other day, and guys who were first round picks, were getting cut. I mean, people assume this is some easy thing to do just because you're 6'8" or 6'11". But it's a very difficult thing to do to get on that list of the best 400 and what, 60 players, 50 players, in the world in basketball. So,
yeah.
But appreciate Nick Collison coming on with us as always. Always a good conversation and going to be an interesting team to watch all year, Collison and the Oklahoma City Thunder. Another episode of the Hang Time Podcast comes to an end, Lang. Sorry, you got to get back to some real work. Make sure you subscribe on iTunes, leave a good review, a glowing, spectacular review about Lang and myself and our guests here on the Hang Time Podcast. And we will see you right here next week on the Hang Time Podcast.
Later.